Hello, this is Deborah Anderson, the Black Woman Animator, come back to you with another video. And in this video, I'm interviewing Frank Abney. Has some technical difficulties with the beginning of the interview, but luckily most of the interview was saved. So please enjoy the Frank Abney interview from where I could save it. Thanks.
Yes. Very much. Hey, Arnold, you know, I had my squad of friends and, uh-huh. you know, going on different, you know, adventures of, you know, when I was bike riding a lot. And just getting into kid stuff.
That's when we were allowed to roam until we just came back home.
Yeah, before the streetlights come on.
Do you have any siblings?
Yeah, I have two sisters. One sister that I grew up with, Connie, she's three years older than my other sister from my dad's previous relationship that I didn't grow up with her, but we... I knew of her growing up and mm-hmm. didn't meet, at least from what I remember, didn't meet until I was an adult. So, all the way on the East Coast.
All right. So what are some of your best childhood memories?
Ooh, I'd say those adventures. I mean, whether it was out with friends or, you know, just my sister and I getting into stuff. You know, mm-hmm. it was always, you know, just doing things like some of the memories that come to mind is like, you know, the Mary Poppins thing, you know, she would float down on, you know, so me trying that with umbrella jumping off of stuff and
be, you know, unsuccessful.
Trying to fill that little doesn't work. It's not the same. Or like, you know, playing in the. You know, because you know you can like push. You can if you leave the door open, you can push the button and you can start it, and it would work as long because you know the button that activates is when the door is closed, and if you hold, turn it on. So just being small enough to like roll around in there, nothing like dangerous, but like it was just
I mean,
fun
if you don't, if you consider being in the dryer not dangerous.
If the door was closed, that'd be a different situation.
Yeah, there's levels to it. I feel like the BMX thing makes more sense now. Like you're just like, hey, let me just go in the dryer right quick.
Yeah, I mean that's probably what led to that, because there's a lot of stuff, you know. Like I remember my grandma had this there's like a little like decline in her backyard, and there was mm-hmm. I remember launching off of these little stairs with the bike, and it was just like little, I guess, daredevil type stuff.
Were you a swing jumper? Like when you go to the top?
The only thing though is like I would do these things, and even on my bike, but I also like had kind of like a fear of heights, but it was weird. Like it was, I guess, that excitement of like pushing through the fear, I guess. I don't know.
Adrenaline. You're like, what's that?
Adrenaline junkie kind of thing.
What's the action star that had to like keep his adrenaline up throughout the whole movie?
I know you're talking about. It was Jason Statham, I think. I know you're talking about.
So, what is your cultural makeup? That's not to say what is your ethnicity, but also what is the culture of where you grew up and the uniqueness of where you're from?
Oh, I mean, I guess I don't see it as that different, but people notice a difference when you're from like the Bay Area.
Yeah.
I don't see it. I don't know. I guess because I maybe it was the bouncing around a little bit, because there, you know, there's different pockets, you know, within there. So like, you know, my grandpa, he lived in San Francisco, mm-hmm. you know, being over there is a different vibe than like being in Oakland. Being in Oakland is a different vibe than kind of being in Richmond. And then like, you know, further north, you know, it's way different. And so, I mean, I guess, I got a little mix of all of it. and then coming to, I feel like coming to LA, I didn't come to LA till, you know, I started working in film, but, that's where I noticed a difference, like just from everything, and coming here, and I was like, oh, Okay, so, but it was not in a bad way, but it, you know, you just
Yeah.
notice the difference. Yeah, I can't pinpoint like what it is though.
Yeah, I remember going to see Ryan Coogler talk, and he was talking about the difference between being from like Oakland and then coming down to LA, and the vibes are like really different.
It's a I feel like I think on the surface, like what I felt was there's a lot more there's a lot more of a kind of push and busyness here that was like, you know, to do something or to make something or to make it or you know, like there's almost like I mean, I experienced somewhat of a facade to you know people some people not everybody great people here that I didn't really experience back home. You know, it's different.
I've said that people kind of like create ways to be flaky. Like they're like there's like other people who are flaky in other places, but then like here, people will like mention that that we should do something and then flake out on it. And it's like you could have just not said anything.
Yes, that's the thing, the talk of doing things that you never intended to.
Like you could just shut up. Like you don't have to do it.
if I hit you up to do the thing, then it's like, oh, when you know, like it's kind of like I didn't expect you to actually like, you know,
Right.
mention it.
Like I sometimes reach out to people I've interviewed to like hang out, like go to lunch or whatever, and one person, like he's from New York City though, and so like I reached out to him to like to hang out, and then we started like planning it in the same conversation. I'm like, wait, we're doing this? Like, oh wow, like the plans are actually being made.
No, see, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's how I like to, yeah. Like, if we're gonna do it, let's just do it.
Yeah.
I know things come up, but yeah, have the intention to do the
Right.
thing.
That's why I want to like I say that I want to have the LA experience, not the Hollywood experience, which I feel like is
Yeah,
two different things.
yeah,
So, I saw you say one time that you like would people watch with your mom, and I
yeah.
just wanted to say I highly suggest watching like some watching locations that I suggest is like have you ever been to Frenchman Street in New Orleans?
I think I may not have known what the street was, but
It's
near
like
my
where
is
all the
that.
jazz clubs are.
I think so. I think I stayed not too far from there last time I was there, but
Yes,
yeah,
in the
I
French
didn't think
Quarter,
much.
like people watching at night at Frenchman.
Okay.
And then when I lived in Seoul, like I had bangers as like Facebook statuses because I'm like very observant, and so I would like be I had like a 2010 to well 2009 to 2011, I'd just be like observing them, and people would thought my Facebook statuses were hilarious. But people watching in Seoul is like high bar these days.
I like that.
Someone so did you have any traditions from growing up? Like any like holiday or just like every so often birthday?
I mean, I think Christmas was a big deal. Like that I think that time of year is my favorite time of year. And you know, even if you know, like birthdays were, I mean, as a kid, we did certain stuff for birthdays, but then it, you know, it became like kind of like, you know, what do you want kind of thing, like or you putting a list together or you know, giving. But Christmas was on a different level. Christmas was like, you know, we always wanted, like you had to have the tree, you had to have like, you know, you put a list together, hope mom gets it, and whatever she got, you know, we would try to guess, or and my sister, she would pull me into like, you know, doing a little peeking before. And my mom, like she had to hide gifts like in her trunk or in the like wherever. Just but like that was a big deal for me. And then and around that time, like watching like Home Alone, like that was
yeah.
I was like, so you have to watch Home Alone during that time. But yeah, just that experience of like just the sharing of that kind of that giving and I don't know. Mm-hmm. Also, the weather is nice, like where it's like it's a little cool, but like you know, you're warm inside, and I don't know, some about it that's just
a nice dynamic.
Yeah.
So let's go through what was your journey in art and animation during your childhood.
So I was always just doodling and drawing what I saw on like cartoons and stuff. Like yeah, but I would. So these different characters, like, you know, whether it was the Flintstones or Looney Tunes, whoever, like I would draw them and put them in my own kind of situations that I would make up and, mm-hmm. you know, like crisscross with the thing.
Yeah.
So like I would put like baggy jeans or backwards pants on the Looney Tunes or like, you know, that was my early kind of like intro was like just liking the stuff that I was watching, but giving them their own stories. So I'd say after my dad passed, it kind of shifted a little bit where I feel like I was paying more attention to stories and you know, I saw The Lion King around 8 or 9, somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that was like the launching point. You know, I talk about this sometimes where, you know, it was like the first one that I really saw, you know, myself in this movie, you know, like,
yeah.
And, you know, just losing my dad and those like nervous feelings growing up into adulthood. And mm-hmm. you know, it was kind of like watching that, I was like, oh, that's me. and I would draw them and I would like, I didn't know why I would come to school and watch that every day, but you know, it did something. And I think from there I started paying more attention to these stories and also character. Like I would pay attention to the performances a lot and, you know, try to imitate and like I think it kind of carried through, you know, when I got into BMX around like 13, 14. Mm-hmm. or so, and we would go around and, you know, make videos and stuff, and so like all of that was playing a role into like when I found out what an animator was. And
mm-hmm.
it's like I knew I wanted to make like movies or shows or be a part of something like that. I didn't know what though, you know. I thought everybody just did everything. And so I found out what, you know, the animator was like, you know, pretty late in high school. And then, you know, I kind of took that path. You know, one of my friends, he mentioned this college. They had an animation program. The one that was near us, because they had different locations, the one that was near us didn't have an animation program, but they had a multimedia program. And I remember going into the orientation and, mm-hmm. you know, made me think I was in the right place. It wasn't the right place.
Right.
I'm like learning web stuff and like Photoshop. I'm like, okay, I think. And then there's going to be a Maya class at the end. Only one.
Yeah.
I don't know what I need to know, but I know this isn't enough.
Right. Yeah.
So I transferred over to Art Institute and it was like, okay, this feels more like what I'm supposed to be learning.
Yeah.
You know, I have felt like, you know, I had to start over in a way, but, you know, it was worth it. And then
mm-hmm.
animation mentor right after that, when I found out what that was, you know, where it's like specifically just animation, but then also you're learning from industry professionals and stuff. And I was like, oh,
right.
Okay. So I'm going to go back to school again. But that was the path in though, you know, just starting from those drawings and, you know, kind of a bit of a tragic transition into being fascinated with storytelling and all that.
I
think it's kind of like that thing where you're trying to find, it was like experiencing a happy ending in these movies and you know, just wanting to feel that, wanting to see yourself in that, and, you know, hopefully have your own happy ending, you know.
Mm-hmm. What personally, like, what do you think about the story and Onward?
Onward. I mean, that one, that was, I mean, when I was at the studio and that film was first pitched to, you know, the studio as a, we had like a, what do they call it? Like a all hands on deck meeting. Like it was everybody, the whole studio, you know, with announcements and all that. And yeah, when I heard just like the log line of this movie, I was like, oh damn. Like I knew it was going to be something that I would connect with. And
yeah,
it's just the timing of it though. It was like, ah, oh, damn. Cause I was getting onto Soul early. So yeah. I was like, that was one that I was going to end up skipping. But then Soul was like, okay, this is the first like black lead in a animated film. I was like, okay, I got to get on that.
Yeah. But
this one I really connected. So there was a bit of a compromise. Like I helped out on Onward for like a month and made some shots and then went on Soul. But like, yeah, that movie, it hit something different for me, like seeing that and also, you know, seeing the role that Ian's brother played in his life. You know, I was thinking of my older sister and like, you know, just the stuff that my mom would tell me, like she had done, you know, when I was little and growing up and being that older sister. And figure in my life growing up, you know, it's it was very like I'm in there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Man, I didn't even have like any like real connection to it, but I was like tearing up, like, oh, I'm good.
Yeah.
So in my childhood, I never learned how to ride a skateboard because of my aversion to getting hurt. So, like, how did you get into BMX and like that whole thing?
I think it was part of my connection with animation, I think, as well. Like, even though I didn't know it yet, because I was really fascinated with motion and like, you know, like I was saying earlier, like, I would imitate people and like, you know, I'd look at people's walks and like. And then, so I was fascinated with movement and what people could do with their bodies and stuff. And somehow I saw the X Games one day on TV back when they used to do it in San Francisco. And I saw like some of the neighborhood friends, like, you know, you'd go and, you know, you'd jump little things, you make little ramps outside and stuff. Mm-hmm. And we would do that, but like, when I saw the X Games and saw like that shit, like I'm like, oh. And then I saw someone do a trick in front of me before, like I was unlocking my bike from school and I was leaving and I went home and I was just trying it. I was like, and I just got hooked and it's kind of like, I don't know. I think at the core of us as artists, like we're problem solvers, and that was a big problem solving thing to have in your life, you know, being, because you're only limited by your own work that you put into it. You know, your progression is based on, you know, you pushing yourself and you, pushing through fear as well. And, but yeah, when I saw the X Games and then I convinced my mom to, since it was in San Francisco, to take me. So I went and saw it in person. And I remember that birthday. I was like, you know, I got pads and stuff and I bought a bike off of my friend, but then, you know, the following birthday I picked out a bike at the bike shop that I wanted that was gonna kick off my my BMX career. And then and you know, I would be at it like every day it worked up to a point where, you know, I started competing and you know, had my first pro contest, like, you know, I think it was a little before or during college. Yeah, that was like that was my other passion.
Yeah. Was it like more impressive because of like you're like a stocky guy, so like was it like more impressive that you're able to do the moves or?
I think so, 'cause like I mean, I remember the bike shop owner that I got the bike from. He was like, you know, this is usually for smaller guys. And so I don't know. He was like trying to convince me like this may not be the thing. Like you should do some
Right.
'cause everybody would, you know, it was always football for me. Like,
Yeah.
you know, especially in high school when I started doing like weight training, like, you know, lifting and all that stuff. Like it was like, you know, yeah, you should be a linebacker. You should be, you know, and I didn't want to do that. I was like,
Right.
it was fun, like to play. I didn't want to play like on a team though. Like we would play like
Yeah.
friends and stuff, but yeah, there's something about that though. Like, and I was like, I didn't care. Like, you know, and it was fine. Like I never felt limited by, you know, like there weren't any tricks that I felt limited by. Like I tried stuff and learned stuff and you know, kept, yeah, it was never, I never let that stuff stop me. It was more like creating more motivation to
Yeah.
you know, be like, okay, that's what you think, but I'm not gonna change what I'm passionate about just because you are projecting whatever limitations you believe, you know, onto me. And
Yeah.
but I think it was, you know, probably a little more impressive for the viewer because I remember even just like it's a little before the pandemic. I remember I went to this skate park and you know, my kids were with me and I remember like there's a dad like, you know, sitting there and I don't think he expected me to do anything. And so when I did some, I remember like the change in his posture, you know, when I came in, you know, kind of sitting back and then afterward when I was leaving, he's like, you know, like kind of and he said something to me like on my way out. He's like, still got it or something like that. Yeah, but yeah, I think it's definitely a there's a shock value there in that
Yeah. What are
conversation.
like some of the kind of worst ways you got hurt?
I've been pretty fortunate
That's good.
with injuries because I mean it's one of the things like one of the things with BMX is like you get hurt when you don't commit, you know, when you hesitate, when you I mean I have a video that I've shared talking specifically about hesitation. It was when I learned front flips, which is, you know, it's a weird trick because ramps, you know, they go you and you have to throw off your axis when you yeah, it's a weird feeling. But after I learned them, I took it to this box jump at this skate park and yeah, just a little split second of hesitation. I didn't get all the way around and you know, ended up coming up a little short and landing on my tailbone. And I'd say that one was one of the bad ones where because I could feel that for like a year after that. And then there was this, I remember when I was in college, there was this rail at some company. It was a nice rail though, but it was it was aluminum, which it wasn't great to slide, you know. Usually you pick something steel that's, you know, strong but also, you know, slick. But I remember my pegs got stuck in it when I hopped onto it and it shot me off. It bucked me off the rail and on, you know, down the stairs. And I ended up landing on my ankle sideways and it tore all the ligaments on
Oof.
the side. And yeah, I was on crutches for a little bit. And that was probably like the worst one. But yeah, other than that, I hadn't broken anything or, you know, maybe see that's where being a bigger guy comes in handy.
You got
Yeah, see?
a
See, y'all just fall and you just instantly
Yeah, like I grew up being like a tomboy, so like when I lived in New Orleans for a little bit, like fifth grade would be like playing, like there'd be like a bunch of trash on the playground, and so I play like football with like we would just pick up random articles of trash with the boys and like play football. And then sixth grade was like trying to learn how to double dutch or whatever. But I remember they would like do all the like backflips and stuff, and I'd be like, I can do the cartwheel, but going to the backflip, I'm like, I'm out. I even to the point where now like I want to do adult gymnastics just so I can like learn how to do a black backflip.
Oh, yeah. See, that's another thing too, like gymnastics and like watching gymnastics or figure skating or like even just like going down rabbit holes of like parkour videos. Like that's another thing that I love to watch too. Like that was like backflips as a kid. That's like the peak. Like if you could do a backflip, that was like, that was your the show off thing that you had in your back pocket whenever you needed to pull it out. I learned them in grass. It was like there was this yard on the way to my like my elementary school down the street. There was this grass that was like extra like fluffy. It had like a little cushion to it. And I remember learning them in there because I felt more safe there and also my mom's bed.
I had uber confidence issues. I played basketball in high school. Like I was like 4 years varsity, but like I had a lot of I had more potential. Like because I when I would play AAU when I was like in middle school and high school, I always played up a year, but it just like my confidence issues were just like I could have been a better player, but
Oh,
my
well,
dad tried, but
there's still time.
yeah, I mean, I'm like even like because after graduating high school, I played with guys, and so I went back to my school because there was like an old school versus new school, and my coach
Oh.
was the old school coach, and she's like, "Oh, you raised up your shot." I'm like, "Yeah, play with dudes. I can't like shoot from here, like they'll block it in a second." So I didn't realize how
Nice.
much I changed my game, but playing with guys is like a different story. So.
Nice.
So, was your mom supportive of your artistic interests?
Oh yeah. It was it was a lot safer than BMX, so that was with that it was like it's like okay, let's go to the college, just go to the orientation. It was very yeah. And also I think she saw that I was into it, like I was drawing a lot. She saw that there was an interest in that, and I think that there could be something with that. And also she never there was never that like you need to do this or you need to do that kind of thing. Like it was kind of like whatever you saw for yourself, that you wanted to do. If you're willing to put the work into it, then great. So yeah, she went with me to my art institute to the orientation, and like we rode the BART, we took the train there, so I can get familiar with using the subway and stuff. And she's very supportive of that.
So what went into the decision of going from pro BMX to bro like animator?
Time. There's time and safety. It was like because both of them were gonna require a lot, so and I couldn't do both, because I started getting a taste of like how much goes into animation. And just like I battled it for a while. I was trying to do both. I was trying to find time to ride on the weekends, and then and but like but then projects, sometimes that would take me into the weekends. And and it's just like yeah. And then trying to live outside of that, it's too much. So it was like okay, I could still ride for fun, but I don't have to do this. And also like really thinking about it, I loved storytelling more, and it was something bigger to that within me, and able to put a lot of myself into that, and the stuff I learned from BMX is fed into that as well. So You know, it's yeah, it was tough, but I, you know, I needed to do
When you talk about your childhood, it was like, oh, you were prepping to be an animator because, you know, I
it.
know y'all do the like reference videos and all that stuff. I was like, oh,
Oh yeah.
you were destined.
I did want to be an actor when I was a kid because of watching all those movies and stuff. And
Yeah.
but you know, finding out what an animator was, it's like, oh, okay, I could do that, and you know, mix that with this other version of art as well, and like, you know, it was the perfect blend
Yeah.
of all of it.
So this is the part where I list your projects so that the people watching can know that, you know, some of our favorite things, people who look like us worked on it.
Oh.
Tomb Raider, the video game, Frozen, Big Hero 6, Kung Fu Panda 3, The Boss Baby, Coco, Incredibles 2, Lenoria, Auntie Edna, Toy Story 4, Onward, Soul, Canvas, Pixar Popcorn, 22 vs. Earth, and Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse Part 1.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what do you love about animation?
Oh, what I love about animation is you can do anything. Like, it's not, there's no real limitations outside of your own imagination. Like, you know, it's my medium of choice because it's I think it's the perfect blend of like kind of what I was mentioning with being an animator. Like that, it's the perfect blend of all the art forms. It's and you know, you can tell a story that reaches people in a way to make them think, cry, laugh, like whatever, and or you know, you use it as a teaching element, and people don't realize they're being taught something. Like it's the perfect medium for connection as well, in my opinion. Like, you know, like weaving in your experiences and you know, just putting that truth from yourself or whoever's telling the story, whatever story you're pulling from, like being able to transfer that truth into this medium and to be able to connect with audiences that are gonna see it and know that they're not alone in this world. Like this, it's a powerful thing.
So I'm a staunch advocate for the idea that animation is not just for kids. What are your thoughts on that, and how can we progress towards spreading that idea to the wider audience?
I agree 1,000%. I'm sure people have gotten sick of me saying it on Twitter and
I'll
stuff.
say it every day, like it is a medium, not a genre.
I was just saying this the other day. I was having a conversation and it's like yeah, like I feel like you could tell whatever story you want to in animation. Like I'm probably not going to remember the question now that that came up, because then that's like that can take me off on the whole. But yeah, I believe you could tell any story you want. I want to see, and I want to make more things that are like mature themed and you know, what would be considered adult, or you know, like a lot of the live action films out there. Like I honestly watch more live action than animation, but it inspires animation because of the things that I want to do in animation. So like like I one of my favorite movies, Moonlight or Swan Song, or you know, like these films that have such a heart to them, and a heaviness, and a sense of like there's an inspiring element, and that thing that fills you with just taste of humanity, like all those things. Like I want to see in animation. That's the kind of story I want to tell. Like Causeway is another one. Like I just recently saw, one of my favorite movies now, Causeway. Like I'm like,
I gotta finish that. I'm like halfway through.
It's good. It's good.
Because I keep hearing about it, but I'm like, I just took a pause and I suck at watching things. So like, I'm like, oh yeah, I gotta finish that.
No, it's. I mean, it's a great story. Like it's and it's very intimate. And mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, when we do something in animation, there's always that question, like, why is it animated?
Yeah.
And I tweeted something recently that was like, don't ask me why animation, because I'm just because I wanted to. Like that's
right.
That's the it's the medium of choice. Like I don't need a reason to do it in animation. Like I know, yeah. Like I do believe that there's a power in utilizing like the power of the medium.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean like every animated film has to have a bit of spectacle or magic or thing that takes us away from reality. Like just seeing things animated, period, takes me away from reality and
right.
But also puts me deeper into it because I feel like, you know, because how we animate and how we try to strip out all the fluff and get to the core of like what a person is thinking and feeling, you know, get to that real subtext and try to bring that out in its rawest mm-hmm. form. You know, I feel like, you know, we get something that's really potent, you know, and
yeah,
yeah, more. I mean, if studio doesn't allow me to, I will find a way to do it. And yeah. that's kind of what I'm doing, you know, with, you know, whenever I choose to do short films or help on short yeah. films or whatever, you know, like the short that I recently posted on social media about, you know, Black Man, like that was, mm-hmm. it's a poem that I'm
yeah.
about my own navigation and feelings going through the world and, you know, healing that child inside that's been quieted because of everything else and just bringing that yeah. to the world. Like, you know, I'm sure, if I brought this and pitched it to a studio, it'd kind of be like, well, why animation? What, you know,
yeah.
You know, and it has some of that, like, you know, some hints of like fantasy elements, but like, you know, it's an intimate day in the life kind of thing. And that's, yeah. you know, and that's okay. You know, I don't, mm-hmm. it doesn't have to be some magical pixie dust love story type thing to, yeah. yeah, yeah.
As a Black woman, I look forward to Black Man.
I appreciate it. It's definitely something for everybody. I mean, it's you know, it's of course it's through my lens, but like I remember when I shared it with my mom, like she connected right away. It was like mm-hmm. you know, seeing herself in this, and you know, it's a universal feeling that we have. But I feel like just me acknowledging it. Acknowledging these feelings and acknowledging, mm-hmm. you know, everything that's in it is a big deal for me. For what I've experienced in terms of like, you know, some of these feelings and things that has needed to be suppressed, you know, because yeah. of what the world is expecting of you as mm-hmm. yourself. You know, it's yeah.
Yeah, one of my favorite pastimes is like consuming, you know, content. Like Black men talking, like whether it's like Black Love or any like type of roundtable on YouTube where it's like all Black men like talking to each other and getting that space. Sometimes even when I'm reading the comments of like if it's like a relationship post or like on Facebook or some like post where it's like a dynamic where I'll just like scroll through because like on social media I feel like women respond a lot. And so there are some times where I like read a couple of comments and I'm like, I'll scroll to like the dudes that talk. Cause I want to know what the dudes think too. And it's like plenty of women, but I'm like, is there a dude that talks? I'm like, oh,
that's funny.
Just cause I'm like, I want to know like what y'all think.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't
know. And when you're given a space to talk, cause you have to shut down so much. Like y'all talk more in spaces where it's all men sometimes. So
I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah, so I like watching those videos. How's it been transitioning from being an animator to being a director, like both on your short and for larger projects?
I'd say the transition was it was something that I had been waiting for. I'd say like that's because I feel like as I worked on these different projects, like over time, I'm looking at the different elements that are going into it, and I'm paying attention. I'm watching the directors and how they navigate these spaces. And one of the things that I dealt with in college was like, feeling like, you have to hone in on that one thing, and that's the thing that, and for me, it was being an animator, but I was interested in learning about the other stuff too. Like I wanted to learn about lighting and modeling and rigging and shading, like all those things. And even if I didn't have the patience to do them, I tried, but so seeing these films, and even on the game side, like, because Tomb Raider was, I feel like it was a nice transition into film as an animator, because we had a writer on staff, and we talked about Lara's arc through the game, and story moment, like it felt like just like an interactive film. But doing it, like I feel like, so I had done some shorts like in college and stuff like that, but then like Canvas was the first one where I was like, okay, I'm gonna do this, like I'm gonna get a team together, and we're gonna put some actual like money behind this and all that. And for me, it was being on the other side. It was a great experience because all the things that I had felt and learned as an animator working on these projects, things I didn't like, things that were, all that, like I was able to put into that. And then taking it a step further, like after all the learnings on Canvas, working with the different teams and strengths and managing that into different time zones, and working with my producer to like wrangle things, and then getting it out there, with Netflix. And then so taking a step further on the feature when I was at Netflix, like that was it felt like you're like, okay, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. Like it was, we put so much into like crafting the perfect team for this film, and for me, I mean, one of the things I struggled with being a director was, some things that I've witnessed here and there with like leadership and with some directors that I've seen out there. Thankfully haven't experienced it that much, but like this kind of separation, where it's like everyone's in service of your vision, and you're in, there's a difference in hierarchy. So the communication isn't, there's no link between you two, and people aren't necessarily seen as people. And this is all the things that I wanted to do differently when I was directing. And so when I had that opportunity, then that's what I did. I try to talk to everybody, and get to know people, and laugh and joke, and spend time. And it was like I didn't want that feeling of hierarchy. I didn't want that kind of like untouchable vibe going on. And understanding that people have lives as well, and being understanding to, yeah, we have deadlines and we have things that we have to hit, but also you're a person in this. You have personal stuff going on. You have, and so, bringing that place of empathy to that role. And but one of the things I noticed was, depending on where you are, like this it's tough, and also the timelines of some of the projects and things you have to hit, like it's tough. Like sometimes you you have to make hard decisions, or sometimes you have to, you know, really fight to put aside your own stuff that you're going through, because you know you're part of steering the ship. So it sometimes feels like you know you can't afford to go through anything, and you know, it's a lot, but it was it's all necessary, and it's all, you know, it's all a learning experience, and you take that to the next movie, and then the next movie or game or TV or whatever you're directing, like, yeah. So I'd say the transition was in good timing, and it was what I was hoping for, you know, just with all of what I was gathering and starting to prepare for. So
I could see the similarities in how what you talked about drawing and like using what was there, but making it your own and like that stuff. So it's like, sometimes when I think about us as Black people getting into these spaces, sometimes we mimic what the other does. And it's like, how about we do it our way? Like, whether that's the Black or the African way, where it's like more communal, or any other difference that we have. And so that's what I hope that we continue to do, is like, not necessarily do it, look like us, but do it the exact same way that other people do it.
Yeah. You gotta lean into your own voice and, you know, find that voice and use it, shout yell with it.
So I saw that you read like the Big Leap. Like, I'm actually in Kevin Stage's Wife book club. We read it a couple years ago, and it was so interesting that some people, I wasn't familiar with this, but like, some people were like, I can't read the book, I'm not ready. like some people are like, not ready. It's like, some people may be afraid to be held accountable for the new information that they learn.
I can see that. Yeah.
So like, I know you're like cool with Kev on Stage. Have you seen his interview with Gay Hendricks, with, you know, his wife had them on the Love Hour or whatever?
No.
Yeah. No, he brought Gay Hendricks to talk about the book. And so, I feel like I need to read it again, but can you talk about what your thoughts of the book, like,
yeah, that, I mean, that book was very transformative for me. Like, there's a few things in particular that really stuck with me. You know, this idea of, you know, the upper limit problem, you know, that, you know, that identifying that and seeing those moments for myself where I hit an upper limit problem, where you know, everything is going great and you're in your groove and you know, just something out there, something is telling you, you know, like, why are you starting to worry about this? Like, why, you know,
right?
And what, you know, and then, so like now, you know, I'm able to identify that, like, you know, I'll tell my girlfriend sometimes when on the phone, I'm like, I hit an upper limit today. Like, I hit, you know, and you know, telling about like what it was, what happened, and you know, just being able to identify those and snap out of it, and then, you know, just increasing that ceiling, increasing that to allow you to continue to live in your best self and know that you deserve to live in that space for yourself, and you know, also like thinking of some of the I was just telling some people about this recently, the idea of, you know, just the, how is it put? The zone of genius and the zone of excellence. And, you know, just like that was also, you know, just to kind of go back to the transition animator to director, it was like, being a director was me stepping into that zone of genius, because as scary as it was, and I knew there was going to be, you know, some learning I needed to do, and you know, just being in this new space on a larger project. But it was that thing that was like, I can live in this zone of excellence, you know, as an animator. Yeah. Like, okay, mm-hmm. I'm comfortable, you know, I'm familiar with the challenges, you know, there are challenges on every film, and, you know, I know how to navigate them, and I can, you know, it could be fine. It's great. But it also connects with BMX as well. Like, am I stepping into that space? Am I like challenging myself with fear that comes up and pushing through it in a way to level myself up in a way that I want to and that I see for myself. Mm-hmm. And it was very much that, you know, for me, like with directing, it was like pushing through this into this place of fear, like a place that I knew I can like I know I can handle.
Yeah.
But I haven't handled it on that level with, like, you know, certain pressures that come along with it. And then, you know, it's like that book came around a really great time, because, like, even, you know, on the film that I was directing before, like with Netflix, like, you know, there's personal things going on, you know,
yeah,
and my own big life changes happening, and mm-hmm. you know, that book was like big. And then,
yeah,
you know, I remember it ended up like putting me in a different place with, like, circling back to old ideas that I had, you know, like, yeah. Like after departing, you know, Netflix, like I was heavy into developing my own projects. I was back into that. I'd started transitioning back into that groove of I need to get my stories out. I need to, like, you know, so over the course of, you know, some months, like I just rode this creative wave.
Yeah. Like, oh, nice.
You know, developing project after project, and, you know, was writing a lot, and, you know, I bought this cork board, and I had this, like, this probably, like, I think it's like the third film that I was developing is up right now, you know, on mm-hmm. Index cards. And, you know, I feel like stepping into that genius of yourself,
yeah.
you know, it provided a new door to be opened that mm-hmm. was always there, but you didn't, you know, you looked the other way for whatever reason, or you didn't see it, you yeah. didn't notice it, whatever it is, you know. And that I feel like that book, and also my friend and coach Lou Catone, she's the one that introduced me to the book. Like, that is mm-hmm. just like, yeah, life changing. It's something that I feel like I'm gonna have to reread every now and then,
yeah. just
to, like, refamiliarize myself with it.
I feel like a cool takeaway for me was, like, when you think about the, like, zone of genius and zone of excellence, sometimes we spend time, like, learning things for the zone of excellence, but it's actually a waste of time because it doesn't lead to you doing your zone of genius. So even if you're, like, good at it, or you, like, we just think of these arbitrary things that we should get good at, and it's like, that doesn't matter for your zone of genius, though. So yeah. don't do it. Don't spend time doing it. Like, it's like, you know, I think something that I always think of is, like, you know, people, oh, let me get good at Excel. But is Excel going to help you do what you need? Like, why? Why are you getting yeah. good at this arbitrary thing? Just because, like, maybe it's good. Like, oh, everybody gives a suggestion that you should do this or do that. And it's like, but is it going to help you get towards yeah. your goal, though? So you shouldn't yeah. waste time on it, even if it's a good thing to do.
Yeah. It's like, does it serve your purpose? You know, that was one thing that that Lou had me do when I first started working with her. It was like identifying your life's purpose. Like, what is your mm-hmm. what is your purpose? What's your, you mm-hmm. know, and and, you know, for me, it was building bridges with people, in shared experiences by way of storytelling.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, so everything that I'm going to be choosing to do needs to hinge on that. Like it's, you know, that's, it needs to be serving that. And so, you know, I can, you know, take freelance things here and there and that maybe doing other stuff, you know, if I, you know, feel interested in doing it or whatever, but like, but I also have to think, how is it going to be serving this or like, and there's a lot of things that I probably would have done that I won't do, you know, because that time could be used doing something else that's serving that purpose or helping other people, you know, again, part of that purpose, you know, bridging, you know, building bridges, you know, how can I connect with others to, you know, maybe help them get a little closer to their serving theirs as well. So,
Since I did miss Mission Kim on stage, shout out to him for winning his NAACP Image Award.
Yeah.
he didn't have to lose a third time. But how was it to win an award, the NAACP Image Award, for an animated project that is your personal project and from a Black American organization?
That was, I don't even, I'm going to try to find the words, but like it was, I don't, for one, I feel like I don't really win stuff. that's one thing, but you know, for it to be that and the legacy that has come with that and, you know, just, you know, we all, you know, we say things about, you know, we don't do things for recognition. We don't, you know, even though we don't, it's nice when it happens. And so for people to see this project and, you know, and feel connected with it in a way to like award us with something like that. Like it was mind blowing. Like I'm still like in shock with that, and it feels special and in a way that feeds me in a different way, because you know I had my own insecurities with this project. I had my own insecurities about my own interests within this industry, like like, is this, you know, like with the direction of, you know, the industry, like is there space for me, is there space for but then it's like, no, you create your space, like make, you know,
pull up a chair to the table.
even because, you know, even if the film doesn't fit a certain, you know, the typical animation formula of like, you know, some of these silent shorts of like certain love stories that happen in this way and these type of characters need to be in there and this type of, and then the magic and the you know, all the things that, you know, are required to for it to be animated, like it's like, no, like I did pitch this short, it was slightly different but not too different, you know, years ago, and It didn't go anywhere, so it's like, okay, I'm gonna figure out some way of making this myself then. Yeah. And so taking that leap in believing in my own message of like what I want to put into this industry and also what I want to put out into the world as a creator, like I you know, battling those insecurities of are people gonna like it because there's not a bunch of jokes and like, it's not that, but then just like quieting all that and leaning into, you know, what I believe for myself and then having other people acknowledge that in a good way. Like it, you know, it feels good.
It feels good. Like I remember I've tried to do several like, you know, daily art challenges, which are really hard to do. I've done like Sculpt January or Sculpt Timber or something like that, trying to, you know, learn digital sculpting and whatnot. And I remember sometimes, you know, because I would like be working and doing other stuff, it was like I can dedicate these like couple hours from 2 a.m. to like 3 to 4 a.m. to like, oh, let me do this right quick before like the day is over, but let me, oh, this is day 5. But I remember for like maybe a sculpt timber, like it was like the word was tiny. And I made like a tiny person. It wasn't like a person. It was like, you know, those like clip art where it's like the white, like it's like a character that's white and it doesn't have a face and it's just all white and it's like a ball with like arms and stuff like that. It was like that. And then I like did the like that statue where like you put your arms back and then it was like a big ball and it was so simple and I'm like, this is like so simple. And then you put it out there for public consumption. They're like, oh my God. And I'm like, what? Like, it's not that deep. Like, but like you just do stuff and like other people are like, that's how I've gotten over my perfectionism, is like trying to learn how to do and just put it out there and it's like good enough. It's not good enough to me, but it's good enough to put out. And then people are like respond positively and you're like, what? Okay, I guess. So did you have like any wonderment when doing Canvas or any of your other projects where you're like that your team believes in you, like or your team is willing to be your team? Like, did you have any like wonderment around that?
I think just people agreeing to be a part of it was like that sealed the deal for me, you know, with that. Like, it was like, okay, they're willing to put this time for when they all are working full time and, you know, doing, they only have their own jobs to do. Some of them had families and stuff like, I'm like, you know, that showed me, and it meant a lot to me, you know, for people to agree to do that, especially, you know, you don't have to. And, you know, especially I think when it's a project that's personal to you as well, like there's a live action short that I did that I hadn't put out yet, but it was I remember one of the actors that joined in, Charles Williams, he I sent him the story, and then like I had done like a little animatic for it, and he was just so moved by the story alone that he was like, he's like, whatever, like, however we gotta, you know, and that's happened a few times where it's like, you know, whatever, however we need to make this happen. Like, yes, like, you know, like maybe we think it's necessary or whatever, like, or don't, or like, whatever. Yeah. You know? It's like, you know,
I just want to be a part of it.
Yeah. And so, and I know I've had those feelings like in past projects that I jumped in on. You know, knowing I wasn't, you know, going to be paid anything or anything, but like, you know, if you can do that in your life, like, cause it depends, you know, there's certain moments where you can't afford that time and you have to justify that time. So, I understand that and try to make sure that I pay people. But, that just the agreeing alone, like kind of, you know, it took away that wondering, and I think a lot of my wondering was like how it would be received in the industry, you know, how, you know, because also when you do things, I feel like when you get into any field or any, I mean, just in life in general, like there are some people out there that see you how they saw you in the beginning.
Yeah.
And will never see you any differently. And so, you know, no matter what you do in your life, how you progress, how you, whatever, you know, there's always going to be those people that are like, how did they get there? How did they do that? How did they, you know, or just feeling like you don't deserve, you're not deserving. And, you know, and I had to shut that down quick because it's like, I know what I deserve. I know, I know the work that I've put in. I know the late nights. I know the early mornings. I know all the struggles and you know, that's not for everyone else to know and feel something about. Like that's for me. And you know, it's not my business, you know, what people think or feel when it comes to me and how I've navigated the industry. You know, it's yeah, it's, you know, live your life.
Yeah. We got to be a part of a great day in animation, which for me, I had no earthly idea what I was showing up for. Like, Ron Myrick invited me to it, and he kind of like was like, "Oh, let's go to the Paramount lot." I'm like, "Okay." So I was like kind of upset because I didn't dress like any. I'm just like, I ain't dressed like a bum, but like I was like, hey, I could have worn something better. So like, what was it being a part of that historical moment for you?
That was magical. That was I remember being up on the stairs, like, you know, when we were about to take the photo, just like.
I think I was right next to you.
Looking at everybody, you were. I think
out. Maybe. Yeah, you're to the
my
left.
My upper right. Yeah. it was all the general, especially when everyone came down to like, you know, they after we took the picture and everyone like introduced themselves and saying, you know, they're beasts. Like I was like, man, this is like. Just all of everything that we've touched and that we've been a part of, and just like how we're infused in all these projects that have inspired or been a part of, like, you know, more than just our culture. Like it was amazing. And then I remember just walking up and seeing, you know, seeing little table, seeing, you know, recognizing some people that I hadn't met in person, but like, you know, and seeing the differences, the different generations that were all there. And I was like, this is something. Like, it was like a weird, like, animation family reunion cookout kind of kind of thing. It was, yeah, it was real nice. I'm just thankful, you know, being able to experience that, and also just to know, you know, of everything that we've contributed. And there's so much more I don't know that we've contributed, but you know, the bit that I do know is like, you know, this is a privilege.
What was cool for me was like, I felt like I had the same experience like some of the older people had, where it was like that family reunion of like seeing people that you worked with 20 years ago or something like that. Because with my YouTube channel, I've interviewed like half of the people there, and I'm like meeting them in person. So it's like, hey, like I get to experience the same thing, like the OGs experience.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, all right, now I gotta get the contact information of the other half of the people. So I'm just like trying to talk to people, like, yes, but wait, let me go get everybody's contact information so I can interview the other half of the people here.
Yeah. It's like, oh, did you say YouTube? Like, or
right.
Yeah. About YouTube. Let,
random transition. What was your personal reason for being part of Rise Up Animation?
I think it was a way to do kind of what I've already kind of been doing, but on a larger scale. Like, you know, because I, you know, I get emails sometimes, you know, like looking at work or you know, advice or social media, you know, just questions or, you know, whatever it is. And but like, how can we do that on a larger scale, but also during a tough time that we were going through? You know, like, because I'm a firm believer in using art to heal, to express yourself, express those things that you shouldn't keep inside, and you know, what a time to do that, you know, during, you know, experiencing yet another murder, as well as like being in the pandemic, where, you know, we're kind of forced to be somewhat isolated, and there's a lot going on, and there's a lot of people that I've experienced, you know, going to talks or like, you know, Black College Expo, or, you know, just thinking of my own transition into, you know, pursuing this. and also thinking about like how expensive it is.
Yeah.
You know, it's like how can we do something to give back in a big way? And yeah, it was like a no-brainer. Like it's
Yeah.
yeah.
So to continue on that topic, like as someone you're like approaching like being a veteran in the industry, if like what have you decided is your purpose in regards to blackness and black professionals in animation?
I think very much what we do in Rise Up, but also, you know, on a personal level, like, you know, giving passing along the knowledge that I've acquired, and also providing opportunities, you know, for those that are ready. You know, it doesn't, you know, that was one of the things on, you know, the projects that I've that I've directed. Like it's not just about what's on paper, you know. It's because there's a lot of times people just need that chance and that opportunity, both when they're in the industry and also to get into the industry, you know. Because a lot of times it's like how do I do that? Like how do I even get there? Because you know there is that thing of like, I experienced it after college where it's like, how can I get experience if everywhere I'm looking needs me to have it already? And and so just, you know, helping people navigate that the industry, or even if it's just feedback, or and then on the creation side, like, you know, how can I bring something familiar to the screen, you know, that we can enjoy and see ourselves in a different way? Because, you know, we've gotten used to seeing, you know, finding our way into any story out there. But, you know, if we can take that a step further and see it in a way that really speaks to us on an authentic level, like, and just make it more of a norm, you know. Like, yeah, why not? Because I mean, I it's long overdue, and I feel like, you know, that's something that I'm willing to fight for, and not just fight, not just the visibility of seeing, you know, black characters on screen, or you know, but, you know, fighting for the specificity and why certain things matter and why certain things are wrong to try to erase for a global appeal or whatever, you know, as if, you know, our culture and in what we deal with isn't appealing or isn't universal. Because, you know, I also believe that as different as y'all are, you know, there's a lot of similarities. Like we, you know, there's a lot of things that, you know, it may not be exactly the same, but it's still relatable. And you can still, people can still get something out of it, even if they can't fully relate to it. And I mean, obviously, like we've been doing it for years, so
And I like
you
this
know.
term that has become popular in the last couple of years because, like, we are the global majority. So, like, how does that make sense that we wouldn't be marketable?
Yeah,
And,
so doing my best to put those stories out there, get them out.
yeah. And something I love to experience personally is like when I was watching, you know, the character walk down the street in Jamal Bradley's Substance and like, oh yeah, a black person animated that. Or like in Into the Spider-Verse where he was doing the code switching of like talking, you know, speaking to a black person Spanish, all this stuff. And it's like, or even in the beginning, the opening scene where he's just like singing a song he don't know the words to. It's just like you could tell, I like being able to tell black people were involved. No matter how nuanced or subtle it is.
Yeah, because there's all those little things that people may not get, but you know, it's a different thing. I tell this story sometimes about, you know, on Soul, like, you know, when it ended up, this particular scene that I animated was, you know, it was Joe and Curly meeting up for the first time, like after, you know, since he's been a student and whatever. But Joe's rushing into the club, and he sees Curly, and they hug, and he walks down. He just rubs his wipes his nose and yeah. You know, like little things that I had to explain in that, like, because
yeah.
Initially it was just like, okay, I'm like no, like he, you know, even if he's not familiar with him, like even if he's not, you know, even if he doesn't even know him, like we usually don't greet each other like that.
And, it's like the Key and Peele skit, like.
Yeah. And so, like, whatever, like, bit of specificity you could put in there, and like, mm-hmm. You know, even, I mean, it didn't end up kind of like what I had hoped for, which
yeah.
One of the versions that I blocked was like, you know, the dap then hug, you know, like that, mm-hmm. You know, that was the, mm-hmm. And, it turned out being just the hug, because you know he had to hold the drumsticks, and the, yeah, yeah. It got a little complicated. So, you know, the simplified kind of version was just the hug, but you know that, and even like, you know, how something I do, like, you know, my nose sweats or whatever, and you know, yeah. Little, and it's not anything of trying to be cool. It's not any, yeah. Like, it's just something, you know, it's something that. Yeah, I don't know. It's,
yeah,
just little things you can put in that speak to where you come from.
Mm-hmm. Like, are you like a networking genius or something? Like, how do you know so many people? Like Robert Townsend, Jordan Peele, like Kevin. Like, why do you know everybody?
I'm just doing what you're doing. I just be reaching out to people. I just reached out.
Just ways, like,
because even I'd say my first kind of like taste of like doing that was like, mm-hmm. When I first got to Disney, it was like my first feature studio, and so mm-hmm. I'm there, like, why not take advantage? I'm gonna try to meet everybody, and so
yeah.
I'm going to people's offices, and like, especially uh-huh. Like after there was a point where, you know, a layoff was announced, and you know, mm-hmm. I think we were going to lose a lot of like the OG mm-hmm. 2D hand-drawn animators there. And, yeah. And like, so I'm like, let me hit their offices now and like try to mm-hmm. meet everybody and talk, you know? And so I did that. And of course, you know, there's always people that see it a certain way. Like I remember yeah. Someone, you know, saying something negative about it, like, you know, I'm like, okay, well, you can sit in your office quiet and not talk to anybody.
Right.
Cause like I'm pretty introverted, but like I have extroverted tendencies, and like,
yeah, it's I understand. Yeah. Like I'd be knowing all the people in the office. I'd be like, the 50-year-olds is like my people. Like I'd be like going to the managers, like at the, like they don't have nothing to do with my department, but I'd be going like, hey Judy, like how you doing?
Yeah. So, I mean, and then, you know, so these other people that I've, gotten in touch with, you know, like, it's just, you know, reaching out and like talking to people on a human level, like not yeah. Even, it's not, you know, don't treat anyone any differently just because of, you know, like they just happen to work on some cool shit. And like, it's
nice. I get people, like, at the end of the day, these people are human beings. Like you choose to put them up on this pedestal where you can't reach them, but bring them down to the, like some, there's like very few people who have like so big of an ego that they won't talk to you. Like,
yeah. Yeah. And I, you know, I've experienced those too. Yeah. And, you know, there's a reason why I'm not, you know, in contact with them. So,
yeah,
you know, but like the ones who are like down to earth and, you know, are just like you and just want to, you know,
yeah,
make cool stuff with cool people. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's it. Like, you know, that's who I try to reach out to. And then also just try to learn more about, like, you know, cause one of the things I was doing when I was at Pixar was like trying to, I would try to bridge the gap of like, you know, having the people within the studio know more about some of the Black creators out there, Black mm-hmm. filmmakers or actors, and mm-hmm. and so trying to bring people in to talk and like just have a one-on-one.
Yeah, I saw like in scrolling through, like scrolling to the beginning of your Instagram, I'm like, oh, you was bringing everybody to the studio, Roy. You're like,
it's people that I love as well, and I just want to know, I want to learn more about them and like, and also navigate. I remember tweeting out something before, like even like people in VO, you know, that are specifically in voiceover work, I remember someone saying something. We had a conversation like, how can we bridge the gap with, you know, the artists and you know, the talent providing the voices as well, because we're both working on the same performances. And I remember that was something that Lino, he was our head of animation on Frozen. I remember he would talk about that sometimes too. And, you know, just like, yeah, like, and like, how can we do that more with the projects that we work on? I remember Big Hero 6, we had TJ Miller come in. We did like a little Q&A with him because he played Fred in the movie, and, you know, and it's like, we need more of that to like, because we're both after the same goal. And you know, as animators, we were working on the same performances. Like, so we get a better understanding, like what are you putting into this?
Yeah.
What do you want to see out of the character? How do you see the character? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it could be an open discussion with them, the director, us, like, so we all are in the same, you know, on the same page with this stuff. And I remember I wanted to do that on Kung Fu Panda. I think just timing wise, it didn't pan out. But like, I was like, you know, can we get Jack Black to you know, come in and just like, talk. And we, you know,
yeah,
I remember meeting him too, and he was into it. I met him at a, like the variety event thing, and I had mentioned it because I was still on the project at the time, and but you know, sometimes people are just busy, but like I think they would want to, because it's all you know, it's all a collaborative thing and people like working together. So
yeah, I knew, like, I had the understanding that voiceover was, like, even harder than acting, because you, like, have to bring it all through your voice. But, like, on the last project I was on, I got a front seat to it, because I was an assistant. I started on production, but I just stayed on the recording sessions. And, like, you know, with the kick of, like, having celebrities voice things to make it popular. But, you know, taking direction is a skill. And like, knowing your voice is a skill, and so it was like to see some of like the you know, uber professional voiceover actors like a Gary Anthony Williams or Phil Lamar do their thing, but then like having to drag some of the celebrities or like some of the, like, you know, so they might be like Instagram famous or something like that, and might drag them to like this performance, and it's like, wow, there is like, this is a skill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, can you emphasize this? It's like, it's almost like reteaching a rhythm of language, or like or, you know, especially like, I think that's one of the benefits, you know, doing this as an animator. Because I remember, you know, doing some voice sessions where you kind of, I'm thinking about it as if like when I was animating it too, or if I were to be animating it also, and I'm like, can you punch up this part? Like, if you, all right, say I'm trying to find a way to like have them emphasize this part. Cause I think, you know, this, it'd be a nice punch in thinking of the texture of the scene, and thinking of interesting timing that, you know, but also like not, you know, like I want you to do your thing too, but I don't want to step balance on of it. Like, yeah.
I always saw you with your kids on the Rise Up animation videos, like with you growing up without a father, how does that determine how you navigate fatherhood and maybe even manhood?
It was an interesting thing, because I use my own situation as a thing to, I guess, learn from and pass learnings, you know, like, so my situation, losing my dad, like, so now, you know, as a father, like, there's certain things that I'm trying to instill and trying to teach, you know, even with, like, even with things that I've learned, like, as an adult, you know, like, in ways that I've navigated that I could have been better at, you know, just all those things, like, you know, it's now in my own kind of teaching, nurturing role, you know, as a dad to, you know, pass along those learnings, but also do it in a way that's loving. Like, it's a, you know, there's a place of safety there, and not not a place where you can't make mistakes. Like, I feel, you know, there's the world is going to do that enough, you know, in terms of, like, holding your mistakes in front of your face. And you shouldn't have to deal with that at home. And, you know, like, so when I do, like, when I do have my kids, you know, it's, you know, whatever we're doing, if something comes up, like, you know, I try to use it as a teaching opportunity. So, and, like, also, also thinking of what I would have liked to have. You know, I got a lot from my mom, but, you know, also she had to do a lot to, you know, provide for us. And, you know, so, they know that there's a balance of what I have to do, you know, although they don't live with me when we are together, you know, there's a balance of, like, you know, work and there's work, and then, you know, we have fun, we, you know, play games or go somewhere or watch stuff together, or you know, or, like, my son's old enough now where he's, like, you know, he watches a lot of, like, YouTubers and you know, gaming stuff, and he's, like, you know, wanting to do that. So I'm, like, trying to tell him about ways he can, you know, if you want to do that, you know, this is kind of some of the stuff that goes into doing that. So, you know, look up how to do that, and, like, whatever I can provide to help, you know, in that learning, you know, try to do. And then just, like, in terms of, like, manhood, like, I feel like I've been able to use a lot of the kind of hurt or you know, pain that I've experienced, or the lack I've felt in my work to provide healing, but also, you know, also therapy and working with a coach and all that, like trying to utilize those things to, I mean, that's one of the things in this short that I was mentioning, Black Man, which is, like, you know, the image that I put out there is a boy and man coming together. And, you know, like, me healing that child within me, that's, like, that wants to be heard, wants to be seeing, that's crying out in different ways when you don't realize when you're upset about certain stuff, or you're, you know, certain things are triggered or whatever. Like, a lot of many of us go through as adults, you know, it's you know, it circles back to that kid. You know, a lot of how we form the ideas of love, how we form the ideas of, you know, just what's expected of us and expected out of the world, you know, happens at such a young age. And so, you know, there's a, just, like, trying to take all these learnings over the years, you know, from then, from adulthood, like, as I've stepped into early adulthood and then, you know, continued to grow, you know, just trying to take all those things to just continue to be better, you know. You know, no one's perfect, but we can always be better than we were. yesterday.
Have you heard about or went to go see the first Deep Breath at the Geffen Playhouse?
No.
Like how you were talking about your approach to like fatherhood. There's multiple storylines, but one of the storylines is like that hard fatherhood where it's like, I'm gonna beat you down so that you are prepared for the world. And it's like yours is like, no, the world is gonna beat you down, so I'll lift you up.
Yeah.
Like
It
so
definitely there's definitely a there's definitely a blend of both those in the beginning before I kind of, again, like as you learn more,
Yeah, they mature.
and but yeah, it's yeah, I've seen that style as well.
And then kind of the in between of like what your experience as you are a father and like what you experienced from like not having a father, like the in between of, I remember like before Kev on Stage's brother passed, of like them when he got cancer the first time and they did a video with him and he was talking about like, and Jason was talking about talking to his son, like trying to teach him and not knowing what was going to happen. And he had like this story where he's like, trying to teach his son something and his son like is not, getting it. He's like, I'm trying to teach you because I might not be here. Like, and so it was like that in between of like him knowing that it might be finite and then quicker than they wanted. And it's like, I need you to learn this. So, yeah.
That's a big that's a big thing of how I've done things, over time. It's not always received well because, if they don't know your intention, people can think that you're just trying to get them to do
Do so.
things themselves on their own, or like, or you don't want to help them or something, or you don't, I'm like, no, I'm gonna help you and I'm gonna guide you to a point where I need you to transition into trying yourself. Like, I need you to try, because I literally just had this conversation last week, where I'm like, I was telling my kids, I'm like, there's I was like, you can't expect everyone to do things for you, because you never know. You don't want to have that you give that kind of power to someone else, for one, but also, like, you never know what can happen. I was like thinking of my mom. My dad died, like, it wasn't like it was a expected, so then you're kind of shaken up, your world is just flipped, and and so I always kept that in my head. Like, I was just thinking of, whatever happens with me, or even like in the industry and stuff. Like, I need you to be prepared for anything. Like, I need the because I feel like I learned, I had to learn so much at a young age, whether it was like, just stuff like, it could be like how to do laundry, or how to like cook certain stuff, or clean certain, or I don't know, tie your shoes, like whatever it is, like, like, and I try as much as I try not to push that same thing, because, they're in a different situation, where they have both of their parents. Like, even though their parents aren't together, they're still both alive, and they're both, able to, contribute to their lives. And it's still one of those things where, you never know what can happen. I want you to know these things, and to have this ability, so you don't have to wait on someone for one, for another thing. You don't have to wait. You don't have to, it could be as simple as like unbuckling your like my daughter, like unbuckling your chair or whatever, like, showing them how to do that. So, when I, come around, you don't have to, or you're already ready, or
So if someone was producing a documentary about you, what things would you want them to highlight about your life outside of your work in animation?
Oh. I guess just the the life outside of it in a way that, I mean, it's 'cause I don't put work on as high of a pedestal anymore. Like and outside of anime, I mean, I don't do a whole lot either, so like my life is kind of boring. It's pretty boring. But you know, I don't go out a lot. I don't do a bunch of the, you know, like it's pretty minimal, and that's how I like it. You know,
yeah.
You know, I find fun things to do, you know, I still do things, but it's I'm very content with like not doing a whole lot. But the things I value are you know, just having those that having a good time, like having a good quality time, and we don't even have to be doing anything, like,
right,
you know, just being, you know. And I guess so it may be a pretty boring documentary, but <It's>, but you know, also I guess the some of the things, one of the things that just popped in my head was I guess how different it's been for, you know, the things that I've been interested in. Where it seems like out of the ordinary for someone Black to be doing.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, early on it was, you know, the BMX thing or like even, you know, drawing in school, like, you know, and being into certain shows and stuff, like that wasn't like the typical Black thing you were doing, quote unquote Black, you know, when you were, you know, depending on where you grew up or where you were, you know. And then getting to BMX or like loving to swim, be in the water, like it's like, you know, all these things, like Black folks don't do that, like, wait, right. Like, nah, like don't be limited to what you think that we do. And you know, I was one of the few, you know, doing the, you know, the BMX thing, like in my area, and still on a pro level, you know, there's not nearly as much, you know. And then stepping into animation and directing, you know, there's that was another thing about that Good Day in Animation that was great. It's like seeing the numbers. It's like no, we are out here.
That's what I try to prove on my platform, is that, you know, I've interviewed almost 100 Black animation professionals, and I still got way more to go.
Yeah, we out here. We may not see us, or like we may not
see each other sometimes.
Not all be on social media, or you know, or if we are, not as active, or you know, whatever. But you know, we there.
And jazz is a really Black thing, but like, how did you get into jazz? I saw a couple posts on your Instagram of like going to see, I can't remember the guy's name, but you made a video about it.
Oh, Elu. Yeah, I don't really know. Like, there's I'd say Soul definitely pushed a little further, pushed me further in that direction. But like, I mean, I always kind of listen to just a range of music, but like a lot of oldies and a lot of like that feel. You know, so I think certain jazz music. It definitely fits in that realm. But like I grew up
Zone
listening to
of
oldies and stuff. My mom was always listening to oldies and like,
Yeah.
I probably listen to more old music than new stuff. Like there's that's why I hardly know who anybody is when people when you know
Yeah.
like really new artists. Like I'm like who's that? What's that name? Like I
Yeah,
feel
my
like
playlists are like full of like my top playlists are like gospel and then like 70s music, like Motown and all that type of stuff.
yeah. See, I like let me see. I was putting I was putting together like a playlist not that long ago, but like I mean some of the stuff that I've been listening to, I mean it's a mix. I mean there's like
Yeah. It's
it
kind of
jumps
funny.
from
Yeah. It's kind of funny because like I would be on my commute when I lived in New Orleans and like no matter what it is, I dance the same to it. So I'll be listening to opera like, yeah. Like, you can't tell that I'm listening to the opera, but or classical. I'm like, yeah, classical.
Yeah, see, it can
Were you
jump
saying it jumps
from
from what?
like it could be like from Common to Michael Jackson, Kendrick Lamar to the Hamilton soundtrack to Nas to Stevie Wonder
Yeah.
to the Spinners, Isley Brothers, and I have a Beethoven compilation thing right here, and then
Right.
it's like yeah, it's
I get
all
you.
over.
I get you. I even got like a little, like a, there's like Native American rap.
Oh, here we go.
Like
I
where they
would, I
combine like the drums and the like the high pitched sounds, but then they're rapping over it and stuff.
Oh, that actually, I gotta check that out.
I'll send you like a couple of people that I have on the playlist. So,
Nice.
but yeah, I want to like how can people follow you?
I am on Twitter at I Frank Abney, letter I, because someone took my name already. so I, letter I, Frankabney, and then on Instagram is just at Frank Abney, and that's about it.
So I would like to thank you for allowing me to highlight you. I really appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate you. Thank you for thinking of me and also just what you're doing, highlighting all the amazing artists in this industry that some of us may not know of otherwise, or at least put a face to the names that we've seen. So yeah, thank you.
And to everyone out there, I want you to like, so I know it's real. Comment and tell me how you feel. Subscribe to Citadel and sign up for post notifications to show your zeal. And I'll see you in the next video. Peace.
Peace.